Welcome. Jump into the Compassionate Leader Circle podcast, where leading with love isn't just nice, it's genius. I'm Laurel Donnellan.
And I'm Daryl Brown. We'll unpack business strategies infused with empathy and action, driving both profit and purpose. Our world is ever-changing, so discover how the savvy leader wears compassion as their power suit.
It is my great privilege and honor to have Kiana Schmiedel here today with me. She is the Chief Human Experience Officer at a very cool company called WorkHuman. And we're going to talk about her background and what WorkHuman does and her philosophy about corporate culture. I'm very excited to have you. Welcome.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be here and to be having this conversation, which truly hits at the core of my belief structure, but I think also aligns really nicely with WorkHuman.
Yeah, I love this idea that work is personal. I often talk about work and life as one big soup. We can't really separate them. So let's start with your personal background. You've worked for and have done some amazing things in your career. So can you sort of start at the beginning and tell me like how you got interested in people and human resources and what you've done before you got to WorkHuman?
Sure. I think I need to take you a little bit further back than just the career to say like it all makes sense in the end. But I'll try to be succinct in that. I share my personal background in growing up in a majority white small town because it impacted how I started to think about what's the work that I want to do and how I use my voice. In school, oftentimes I was one of, if not the only student of color. And it became quite apparent when we would come up to times like Black History Month and those sorts of things, that just my very existence in the classroom sometimes made people uncomfortable. And the questions that I asked made people uncomfortable. And I started to think about, well, do I always have to prioritize others' discomfort? Or is there not an opportunity for both of us to be uncomfortable together and get to a more comfortable place? And really understanding that if I really care about someone or something, it doesn't matter if there are those awkward moments. What matters to me is that we're able to work through them and that it's by working through them that we demonstrate that we value each other in some way that feels really sincere. And so it's not always beautiful and easy, but it doesn't always have to be the most difficult thing either. And so I kind of took that into my undergrad background and then my grad background, where I studied, initially started out in nursing and then turned that into a human services degree and a business administration minor. And that's where I found org behavior. And I was like, this is it. Org behavior, org psychology, the idea of how people come together, create these things, inform, you know, business plans, and the business either sinks or swims if the people get it and are working together and are moving along the path. So in starting out, my very first kind of professional job, if you will, was in the dean's office of Harvard Medical School. And I started out as his briefing coordinator. And I realized very early on, people see a young Black 23-year-old girl or some, you know, around that age or so, and they don't expect me to know a lot because they don't expect me to be of that world. And what that meant was I got to ask the questions that other people would feel too, you know, shy to ask because people didn't have high expectations of me. So I got to learn a ton because people encouraged my questions. And then I realized that could in and of itself be a job. And so I kind of kept collecting degrees as I kept collecting other working experiences to get into this space of realizing what I really want to do is help people to have incredibly productive conversations that lead to really impactful work that drive business outcomes. And I started that out in org effectiveness, and just really looking at how orgs function together and working in that space, and then found that all of my conversations had an inclusion element to them. It's all about, like, if we're working better together, it's not that we're not recognizing our differences, it's that we're acknowledging them, and in some cases acknowledging them as strengths and really putting those two things together. And that is the people experience at work. So working in DEI, working in DEI and culture, and then eventually coming to here is kind of putting all of that personal and professional experience together to say, you don't separate work and life. Just like as a kid, you didn't separate school from life. Like, all of these things are part of life. Why would we ever separate them? We spend so much time in this space. So coming to an organization like Work Human for me is saying, I fully reject this idea that these are two separate things. I think it's just about how do you kind of think about how you use your time and where and how your time is spent. But knowing that work is a part of my life, it's really critical for me to be in a place that says the working experience should matter to us as much as any other experience that we have.
Well, while I have you here, because it sounds like, and from your LinkedIn profile, and from what I just heard, it sounds like you've been inside as a Black woman in this diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging. It shouldn't be a trend. It shouldn't be a program. It's really about, it's also about life and society and everything. What do you think we're doing well as you know, let's just say as a discipline, as an organizational behavior discipline, what do you think we're doing well around this, shining light on this area? And what do you think we can do better around diversity?
Sure. I think what we have done well in the kind of org behavior space in relation to DEI is really kind of bringing some of the practice elements of org behavior to DEI and vice versa, like letting them inform each other. So some of the, you know, training, adult learning theory, all of that stuff feels very similar, right? It's how we structure the conversation. It's how we set things up. I think what we haven't done a good job of is saying org behavior, org design, org effectiveness is DEI work, and DEI work is all of those things. By saying that they're separated as disciplines, we haven't allowed for folks who sit outside of the space to really absorb, oh no, this should be embedded within. It's not a separate conversation. It's just how do we have the discussion that this is naturally a part of the fabric. So for instance, when we talk about the employee experience and we talk about recruiting and hiring, that's where most people go, oh, diversity, because they think, you know, people in, people out. And it's not that. It's the entire working experience. So an element of it, sure, is who are you hiring? Who are you bringing in? Who's leaving your organization and some of those net impacts? But really, at the end of the day, it's about the equitable experiences that people are having across a number of dimensions of diversity and intersectionality. And so I think the other piece that has been missed is intersectionality. Really, we've spent a lot of time on those visible dimensions of diversity. A lot of this work started from the EEOC space and the legal elements of, like, how is this defined? But life is not black and white, and life is not those experiences. And the beautiful thing about org behavior, org effectiveness, is it's not those hard, rigid things either. And so DEI really needs to become a lens with which we do all of this work. We have all of these discussions, as opposed to kind of sitting just outside of or next to or thought of as, oh, it's kind of like that. No, they're the same. And so just really embedding that more. I think we also have an opportunity to say, why are we separating this from people leadership? You know, I would love to get to a space that one day all people leaders are DEI leaders and vice versa. I know that some of my DEI leader friends are probably like, hey, hello. But what I will tell you is, for those DEI leaders that are really doing the work well and that are thinking about it holistically across the organization, internally and externally, and all of the different aspects, they have to know as much about a company and the people and the business and what success looks like as a COO, as any other leader in the company. And yet we only think about them in these moments of, I have to have a hard conversation with somebody who is other to me in some way. Can you help coach me on that?
Yeah.
And that's really underutilizing the skill set.
Yeah,
So those would be some of the things. Yeah.
I recently met with a chief diversity officer of a big art institution, and she actually has HR under her and learning under her. And I started to cry, was like, this is brilliant. Like, this is like the theory of it is brilliant. Like, instead of it being separate or being a token position, it's all has to be integrated. And it's such an opportunity. I heard someone recently talk about, you know, the more diverse you're, there was some sort of number, like the profitability of a company can be up to 30% greater if you have a diverse leadership team that understands diversity, equity, and inclusion, right? It's not just the optics, it's the heart of it.
Yeah. And I think one of the things that maybe concerns me is, have we given people permission at a leadership level to show up with all of the experiences and the richness of some of that difference? Or have we said, oh no, you know, leadership presence looks like this and it fits this mold, and therefore if you don't kind of fit that mold in your presentation, then you're not a leader. And really, as we start to look at the aging population across the globe, as we start to think about the Gen X and millennial generations are now stepping into more of those senior leadership roles, and they're some of the more diverse and intersectional groups of, you know, in total of time, and the Gen Zers that are, you know, right behind us are right there as well. It's just remaking what good leadership looks like. And so you start to then have these conversations about EQ and IQ and all of these other things, right? And all of that is a DEI conversation. It's about, how do you show up and recognize who your audience is, who you're talking to? How do you build connections on an individual basis? And then as a leader across an entire group of people, across an entire organization, in order to do that really effectively, you have to be able to not be distracted by difference, but instead use that to the advantage of, this is allowing us to have a richer conversation. This is allowing me to show up as humble and authentic in ways that other leaders in the past were not necessarily allowed to before. And so we have a great opportunity to set what leadership looks like and to be able to say that it includes all of these things that historically have been referred to as soft skills, right? How do you recognize the people that are right there in front of you on a day-to-day basis, contributing to all of the great work that your company produces? All of that stuff was not necessarily the skills that were prized in leaders before, but they are now. And I think recognizing your own individual intersection, but others as well, really sets you up for more success in being that more holistic leader.
You said so many great things there. I love this idea of not being distracted by differences, but I want to circle back to something you said earlier about working at Harvard, because it's also confronting differences, asking questions, having uncomfortable conversations, right? So what advice can you give to the listeners today about that part of it? You know, separate from who's running the organization and whether or not they have a diversity officer or someone in charge. How can we as individuals, as workers within an organization, do better?
I think it's coming with humility, right? I've done DEI work for a very long time. I would tell you I was doing it as a kid, but I've done it
you
for
were.
A very long time. And I think the biggest thing for me, in especially now acknowledging myself as a leader, is the ability to show up as humble in those moments, to acknowledge to people when you're learning something, especially for me, I'm like, oh my gosh, I was not, like, I will tell people, I was not even thinking about this. And I do this for a living because I want them to know, like, it is okay to continue to learn. I think the biggest challenge is when it seems like you are presenting as if you have learned everything there is to learn, or that you are the final expert on something. That can be really tough to engage in a conversation on, especially if, unfortunately, you're meeting with somebody like me who's a bit stubborn and they're like, well, this can't be like the last word. I describe myself as a creative pragmatist for a reason, right? Like, there are some things that it's like, okay, this is not the moment to be an activist. This is the moment to be an advocate, but to show up with somebody in a way that is not adversarial, but to say, like, I need your help with this. If I'm having a conversation with you, XYZ leader, and I'm sitting here as an employee in this company, it's because I need your help with something. And so how do I show up in this way that is clear around what is it that I'm looking for help on? And if I don't know what it is, that I say that, that I know I need your help. I don't know exactly how. Can we think through some of this together? And I don't think that we do that enough, because that's a really scary position to put yourself in.
Yeah.
So it's this this combination of vulnerability and humility and authenticity, I think.
Yeah, I think we could have humility 101 for all leaders. And when in doubt, say, I don't know. And when in doubt, ask a question, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Beautiful. Well, you have a very wonderful and rich background. I want to sort of pivot to what you do now. And I'd love to hear a little bit about WorkHuman's history, because when I saw what it did, I assumed it was a very new company. And then when I read about it, I found out it was 20 years old. So yeah. I'd love to hear maybe a little bit of the creation story and what WorkHuman has evolved to and your role there.
Sure. Listen, I think, you know, we like to think of ourselves a bit as a 20-year-old startup. We never want to see ourselves as like being done, but we do think that we are leading the conversation in a number of ways. Really, the impetus behind WorkHuman is this idea of a human working experience, and that's starting with recognizing employees, right? When you think about what sits at the core of recognition, it's truly the opportunity to say you are seen, valued, and heard, right? And so if you think about the history of this company, it's looking around and it's saying, we have an opportunity on a daily basis to say thank you to somebody that we work with, that helps them to see and understand how their work is valued, and that that doesn't necessarily just need to come from a leader once a year in a performance review, but really it should be generated by the people that you are elbow to elbow with, the people that you are virtually interacting with. It should come across the organization. And then as the company has grown, we've said, well, there's a huge amount of data and information generated by these recognition moments, right? It's the patterns of who's recognizing whom. What are those connections across the departments? You start to identify, well, this one person has been recognized by 35 different people over the course of a month for a number of different things. We should be thinking about how we invest in this individual. Well, if there's that kind of information in there, how do we then think about performance in the performance review? We're already crowdsourcing what across the company people are saying they value in terms of the contributions that other people are making. Why don't we start like performance management from a place of recognition? What are all of the other parts of the employee lifecycle that can be better informed by these moments of recognition that are naturally popping up? And then how do we take them and start to operationalize? What does that mean in terms of career development, career pathing, the investment that we're making in people, and the opportunity that we have as a business to continue to say our success is based on these individual contributions all laddering up to this bigger thing? So that's kind of like generally the history of the organization. I think for us, it's been this journey of having a really smart, sophisticated product in the recognition space, but then growing it to say, really now in this world that we live in of AI and all of this data generation, it's the insights that we get from those interactions that really allow us to make smart business decisions. And instead of starting from a place of deficit, if you start from a place of where things are going well, let's over rotate in that. So it's taking that idea of managing to one's strengths and saying, let's do that as an organization. Let's start where the things are working and say, let's do more of this. Let's continue to encourage this. Let's have that positive motivator. And let's not just have it coming from the top down. Let's have it coming from bottoms up, middle out, and top down all at the same time.
I haven't had the privilege of experiencing your platform as a user. Could you take us, help us understand this from the place of a user. So let's just say there's company XYZ. And what is the user experience as a team member? And what is the user experience as a chief people officer? Like, how do I experience WorkHuman from the inside out?
Sure. So let's start with two new people started on my team this week. And they both report into me. So at the end of the week, for a job well done and a, hey, you just started, we have an award that's a milestone award. That's like, you're new to the company. You are so welcome here. We are so excited that you're here. But it's also an opportunity to acknowledge their onboarding buddies, right? To say, thank you so much. Week one is one of the hardest weeks for a new person. And you were right there along their side along the way. And then putting that out there, it shows up on a public feed and other people jump in on that to say, oh my gosh, I bumped into you in the lunchroom. You were so kind. I didn't even realize it was your first day. Thank you so much. Or, you asked really great questions in this meeting and I'm really excited about working with you. And it starts that generation of you're here. We already see you. We're acknowledging you. And then we move into check-ins. So in our conversations suite of products, if you will, that's where you'll find opportunities to acknowledge and recognize people, but also to do the weekly check-ins, right? So for my one-on-ones with folks on my team, we go into check-ins and it's just tracking our agenda and hey, what's going on? But also it's got little prompts on the side to make sure that all of our conversations are development conversations. I'm going to start from a place of, I trust that you know what you're doing. So let's talk about where you might have questions or where I might need to remove a roadblock for you. But all along the way, let's make sure we're developing you, right? So what are your opportunity areas? Where are your strengths? Where can I reinforce, hey, you've got this? And how I know that is because of how you showed up at this last meeting. And actually that generated this idea. And you kind of have that in tracked in the check-in. And then we have our aims in there. So what are our goals for our personal goals for the year? We refer to them as aims. What are those for the year? How are we tracking against those? It all kind of lives in the same product suite. And then also reflections. So reflections is our performance management tool. And so we operate on a 2-time-a-year schedule. And so for reflections, because it sits in the conversation suite, what it allows people to do is it's an employee-led process, but then you can pull from your check-ins to say, well, these were the things that we were talking about and I'm seeing over the course of these meetings. This was the type of progress that I made. I can pull in these recognition moments. I can also pull in if I've requested feedback or if people have given me feedback on some of the work in the projects that we're partnering on. And I can even pull out some of the work from the projects specifically and literally plug all of that into the reflection moment to just write a quick synopsis that's like, and all the evidence is here because it all lives in the same tool, and send that to my manager. And then me as their manager go, awesome. And all of this evidence, I want to add two other pieces here. Actually, I'd love to reach out to this person for some feedback as I know you were working with them on a project earlier in the year and plop that in there. And it means we've automated so much of what makes performance management an arduous process that we are then saying we're going to spend more time on the discussion around development than we are on the tracking of do we have everything represented here because it all lives in one place. And so that for me is an exciting thing to think about as a head of people or chief human experience officer in my space to be able to say, really at the core of our product is what is the human working experience. How are we making sure that where we can use automation to say, make the process easier, we are, so that we are spending more time doing the human things that are really the things of value that you take away at the end of the day when you're leaving work and you're going home to talk to your pets or calling somebody on the phone or with your family, right? To be able to say, these were the moments, these were the interactions that I had, and less on the, here was the arduous process that took us weeks to get through and I couldn't remember where these notes are, really to have that be seamless and to be able to also track in. So you have your personal aims, you also have your business goals in there so you can see how it all makes sense, and really trying to give people the opportunity to say, we're going to continue to be transparent. We want to share as much information with you as possible. We want to make it as easy for you as possible. So we have things like the mood tracker tool, which for us is a pulse survey tool that allows us to just periodically check in with our people and say, same set of questions. How do you answer them now? Okay, awesome. Let's take that feedback. Let's bring it back to you in these themes. And then let's say, hey, we heard some themes around our benefits. And so we want you to know, here's what we're looking into. Here's what we're seeing in the market. Here's how we're thinking about this. And we'll get back to you with an answer so that we can make sure that as people are putting their contributions into the tool, we, from a HX team perspective, are saying, here's what we owe back to you. And then me sitting on the leadership team can, along with the leadership team, say, and as leaders of the company, here's what we owe to you in terms of an explanation or a rationale, or a, hey, let's do this, or let's celebrate these moments, and all of those things being enhanced by the product itself.
That's a lot of things for one product to do. That's pretty amazing. So I'm curious, if is it all text or is there video interaction or meetings embedded?
Sure. So we don't have meetings embedded. So it's not to take the place of like Zoom or for some folks that use like Google Meet, things like that. It doesn't take the place of that. But there is the opportunity to embed video. So when we think about things like service milestones or life events or all of these things that are found in our recognition products specifically, it's, yes, you can acknowledge the work that's going on an ongoing basis. But again, because as you said, work and life soup. Sometimes I also say time soup. there are these moments that happen outside of the working environment that we also want to recognize as well. And so when you see that people have bought a home or they've got a new puppy or all of these different awards that are going out to people who are saying, hey, I did a thing that matters to me. And we're saying, we love that that matters to you. It matters to us as well. There are videos embedded in that for the service milestones. We recently were in Dublin, where one of our headquarters is, and a team member of ours got picked to join the Hooli dancers up on stage. And while we haven't shared that video broadly, I cannot wait until they hit their anniversary.
Because there's an opportunity
going to
great.
Show up in there.
So it's really like an authentic community experience. It's like a good social, you know, it's all about good and recognition and life and connection, which we need. We need social networks that are actually social and compassionate. So it sounds so cool. How much time do people spend on it a week? Do you know?
So I don't know the exact metric. And actually, that's a great question. I'm happy to look into that. But what I would say is, you know, it's funny. At the end of the day, you know, when you think about how long does it take me to put together an agenda for this meeting? Or if I was going to put these project updates somewhere, you know, that is going on in the tool. In addition to what we share as a best practice or a promising practice internally is, hey, put a reminder on your calendar for Friday or whenever you're kind of ending your week to just like throw 30 minutes on there and with a question of like, who am I recognizing this week? Right? So that it just becomes part of the habit and part of the practice. So for us, it's people being in and out of the various elements of the product all the time during the week, but for different reasons. Like it might take me a little longer to find the absolute perfect GIF to put into somebody's service milestone. And so that might look like a little bit more time than it does necessarily for me to quickly put together what's the agenda for the check-in with, you know, our head of talent acquisition or something like that. But it's really about like, what part of the product are you using and why? And then how do we help you to automate those pieces that it's like, we don't want you thinking too much about how to format this or how to put this together. We really want you to just think about what is it that I'm trying to get across? And do I have everything within the tool to feel like I can authentically represent what I'm trying to say in there?
Well, I just feel like it must be such a mood booster to be on there because it's like all good news and you know, news that instead of wondering what my aims are or my goals are or when I'm going to meet with my manager for one-on-one, it's all there. So I'm a fan. I'm excited to get on the platform and look more carefully. So what has WorkHuman found as the ROI back to companies that use the platform?
Sure. So for us, it's really about the investment in your people, right? And so what we like to say is if you invest 1% of payroll, you're going to see a spike in retention and a decrease in unwanted attrition. And that has, we have the data to prove that to be true. But it's also the, as you mentioned, like it feels like a mood booster. We have found unexpectedly, you know, several years ago, we found that there's also a value to the person who's doing the recognizing, not just the person who's receiving the recognition, right? And so in terms of the retention, it's not just retaining the people who are being recognized, it's helping to retain the people who are doing the recognizing. Hopefully they are also being recognized as well, but it's helping to reset company cultures to this kind of positive flywheel. So as so many companies are talking right now, kind of post the height of the pandemic, at the tail end of the pandemic right now around, oh, our culture has taken a hit, or we're trying to reinvest in our culture, or how do we kind of think about our culture to then make a smart investment? Really, your culture is your people. And so in investing in your people, you're going to have that investment in your culture because you're going to reinforce the right behaviors. For us, we say, it's the, you know, 1% of payroll, tie the recognition to your values and your behaviors, right? When your people are operating at their best, what does that look like? What does it sound like? What does it feel like? And then have those be the things that are getting recognized on a regular basis. And then you see this natural flywheel of, and then more often than not, the right things are happening.
Part of what I read about your company is generational needs for recognition, which I find fascinating. So I'm a boomer, and in your literature, on your website somewhere, it looked like different generations need more recognition than others. Can you speak to that?
Sure. As somebody who has studied generations and generational stereotypes, I will say they are helpful guidelines to think about, but always check in with the individual.
This is a disclaimer, right? We're all individuals.
That's right. But it's this, look, it's the idea of, you know, the boomer parents that raised millennial children to everybody gets a trophy and constant feedback and, you know, this ongoing feedback loop. And so once the millennials showed up in the workforce, they're going, but the teacher would give me the star or the whatever, right? And so it's this moment of like, can you just let me know that I'm on the right track? Okay, great. Got this. I'm on the right track. Can you let me know that I'm right to pivot here? Can you let me know that I'm thinking about this correctly? It's those check-ins of like at each kind of decision point, especially when you're new, but if you're in a new role or if you're growing your scope or if you're becoming a people leader for the first time, it's this idea of, is it okay for me to just check in with somebody who knows better than I do or who has done it before? Is this still looking right to them? Is there anything that they would kind of say or think about differently? And to me, it's just taking mentorship and saying, can we have it in these bite-sized chunks as opposed to this program of we only meet once a month for 30 minutes or sometimes for breakfast or whatever. It's this idea of, can we spread mentorship out? And can I have those reinforcement mechanisms to say, I am on the right track. I am being reassured of this. I think for I always feel bad when I say, and for the Gen Xers that are constantly being sandwiched between the boomers and the millennials, it's this opportunity to say, hey, we see you. We know you're, you know, a smaller group of people overall in terms of the workforce, but you're at this point in your careers where you've been like quietly plugging along for so long. And so can we take these moments to recognize, is it more of the milestones for you? Is it some of those other life events for you? How does that need to show up for you? And then for the Gen Zers that are coming in, we'll figure this out together. But it's this moment of, as we thought about it, right? What are boomers looking for when we think about recognition? Is there an opportunity for us to acknowledge certain contributions and then also acknowledge what's going on in your family life, or what are some other milestones that you're hitting outside of work? For Gen Xers, how are we thinking about, you're sitting in more of the leadership positions now than you were historically before? How are we reinforcing your ability to redefine leadership? For millennials, it's okay, as you're plugging away at those career milestones, you're now coming up to the point where more millennials are buying houses, starting families, all of those things. How are we making this more holistic in terms of the check-in? Hey, how's it going? Do we have enough nursing mothers' rooms? Talk to somebody who has been through this before, all of those things. And then for the Gen Zers, where it's like, you are coming into work at a very interesting time, and a lot more workplaces are hybrid. You may not be in the office all the time. How do we have those moments of acknowledging, hey, we still know you're here, that you're around, there's an open space for you to be able to ask questions, but also for you to be able to define what is work going to look like in the future, and how do we make sure that your voice is part of this conversation?
Wonderful. How many users are there or companies that use your platform currently?
Yeah, we have over 7 million unique users of the platform.
Wow.
Right now.
Amazing. Amazing. And
so
what
for World Gratitude Day, I think we had our biggest year yet, with well over a million moments of gratitude that were shared on that individual particular day. And so for us, it's just exciting to see, as the number of companies that sign up with us grow, as the number of companies that have already signed up with us expand to more employees and more of those things, the opportunities for learning about how is the platform working to serve the needs, where are the gaps that we need to fill in terms of, we're seeing new needs. If you think about the pandemic, it was, can we use the platform to acknowledge people and give them a boost in terms of, you know, housing costs or things like that, right? When employees are in parts of the world that are being devastated by climate change, right? Can we crowdsource some funding together for them in this broader moment of recognizing, hey, we, like, yes, this is a hardship, but we want you to know, like, we are here for you. We are here to support you. Everybody kind of making these individual contributions. And so it's really been amazing to see how our customers are influencing how we think about the platform, its growth, its usage, and all of these amazing things.
So in addition to people communicating to each other within a company, you can communicate with people across the platform. Is that right?
Not yet. That's something that we would love to be able to open up. So within companies for sure, but for us, we're able to bring back to the companies, here's how we're seeing people use it. Here's where we're seeing some synergies. And then more so right now, it's the At Work Human Live, our conference that we have every year. That's the opportunity for us to get our customer companies on stage to share more about that. And then you see, oh, Johnson & Johnson is then going to meet with this company. You know, you start to see all of these companies kind of coming together and saying, oh, interesting. Can you tell me more about this program that you built using the platform? Or, hey, I hear that you've broadened out beyond recognition and you're actually using reflections. And how is that working for you? And as they're all kind of learning with each other, we're also learning from them. And for us internally, you know, I came in with this goal of, I love the product. I've seen it. I fell in love with it, and wanting us to be customer zero, right? Where can we share with our customers where we're setting what we believe is some promising practice? And once they take it and they kind of embed it in their organizations, then it might become a best practice. So I think it's for us, in sharing the data and the insights, really trying to build this broader community of, can we all learn from each other and how we're using the platform.
So is that conference just for people that are using the platform, or is it open to the public?
Oh, it's open to the public.
Yeah. So talk to me about that, because that's kind of interesting for our listeners as a way to learn more about the future of work.
Sure. Well, I think the future of work, compassionate leadership, all of it for me is like at the center of Work Human Live. So it's a combination of really these marquee keynote speakers, like Brené Brown is going to be a keynote speaker for us again next year. But then it's also industry experts. It's also customers who are using the platform, but not necessarily talking about the platform, right? They're talking about the experience of their working cultures. They're talking about some of those, the trends and the things that you're seeing. And then it's also people who are just passionate about creating a more human working experience, who show up to the conferences, they sign up for the sessions. And I will tell you a little bit sheepishly that for me, it was going to my first Work Human Live in 2019 that I said, I have to work here. So at some point in my career, I have to be a part of this company. But my interim goal was to be a speaker at Work Human Live and to say, like, what do I have to contribute? Because I'm always so inspired coming away from these conversations. And so last year, I had the honor and the privilege of being a speaker at Work Human Live. I did not have on my bingo board that then a year later, I would be working at Work
Human Live. And they stole you away. You must have done a really good talk. What did you talk about?
Sure. I talked about really ideas around inclusion and how to honestly have this conversation about what does it mean to show up as truly inclusive and the combination of inclusion and humility, right? It's acknowledging these learning moments. So that's really where you're creating these moments of inclusion. You're creating opportunities for people to be heard, to be right, to expand the conversation and those sorts of things. And so for me, it was amazing. I will tell you, I don't really remember the talk so much. I feel like I blacked out. But I do remember afterwards connecting with so many folks and feeling like this is exactly why I come here. It's one of those conferences to me where, look, there are so many different HR conferences, and I know I'm highly biased. So, you know, take that for what it is. But it's always been the conference that for me, I go, no, this is the conference that I go to not only learn, but to like restore my faith that we can make a difference in what the working experience is, that there is enough of us out there who are thinking about these things in the right way, who are pushing open kind of the doors, the windows, the roof, however you want to think about it, on how do we define the working experience going forward, or how do we redefine it in some ways. And just being around people who are just passionate about, let's make it better. And then you know, you take all of that energy, bottle it up for a year, and you slowly let some of it out as you're going through work. And it's kind of what kept me pushing for, no, it can be better. It can be different. And I'm going to keep trying and I'm going to keep going. And so for me, it's just, now I get this all the time because I'm here, and using the platform all the time. But I will still be at Work Human Live in 2024 as well.
Well, I think you have some cred because you attended before you were an employee, and you were a speaker right before you were an employee. But it sounds amazing. And I have so enjoyed this conversation. I think we could talk probably for a couple more hours, but I need to get you back to work because you do important work. Thank you so much for being with me today. Could you just share the URL for Work Human so that people who want to learn more about the conference or the platform?
Sure. Let me just pull it up so I don't say it wrong. I think make sure that I get all of the right slashes and things in there. But it's www.workhuman.com. And actually on our landing page right now, which is what I wanted to check You can see the link to Work Human Live to see what the agenda is shaping up to be, but also learn more about our platform. I had mentioned the 7 million users, over 180 companies, and in 34 languages. So talk about an inclusive human working experience. That's at the core of us for sure.
Thank you so much for being with me today. So appreciate it.
Thank you.
And that's a heart-wrapped episode of the Compassionate Leader Circle podcast. May your compass always point to kindness.
As you navigate the world, let compassion be your North Star. Join us next time as we continue to redefine success, one heart-led decision at a time.
Lead wisely, lead with heart. You can learn more about us at CompassionateLeadersCircle.com.